Doing today halacha, Saturday based halacha above. We're there. The Machaber says it's if you look on the screen, it's on the second line. Talking about the dinim of tipas chalav, where a drop of milk fell on the outside of a pot that was cooked in fleshes. And there it says is it's a connection to that. It says if enough or connected aish, if the drop of milk fell in a place where there's a fire there, facing the fire, then mutter, it's okay because she'isar from Yavshay, because the fire burns it up before any bleas could happen. Okay, and so no, it doesn't happen. It gets burnt before it's able to transfer the bleas, and therefore you don't have to worry about the milchus and fleshiks in that case mixing together. Okay, this din that the eish could burn up a davar wood is an important, and one of the two parts of the shiloh that can use your stove top grates for milchus and fleshiks, the same one for milchus and for fleshiks. But I'm going to wait to talk about that until we get to the second half, which is the second part of din, which is coming soon, coming whatever in a few dinim. So I'm going to wait to talk about the stove top until we get to there. Okay. Another thing that it's a gate to. Another thing that's geitu is in the halachos of Hagol's Kalim, that there the Prima Gadlum says that we know that there's a difference between Libun and Hagol. Libun burns the blia, destroys it where it is, and Hagol draws the blia out of the kli. So therefore, for example, you could do Libun even when the kli is ben yaymai, but Hagol you have to wait for the kli to be ain't ben yaymai because we don't want the blia that came out to go right back in. So Prima Gadlum says, what about Libun Kal? He says, what about Libun Kal? Does that burn it, or does that draw it out? So he says, he assumes that it draws it out. It works like a gullet, draws out the tam. So he says, well, if it draws out the tam, he says, maybe, he doesn't say for sure, he says, maybe then you have to be Eni Ben Yaymai, or you can't do it on Pesach, which is connected to the same thing. He says, because if it's drawing the tam out, just like Hagol, he's going to put it right back in. So Libun does also. So when we learned Hagol's Kalim, we spoke about this. I'm mentioning it today because one of the reasons to disagree with the Prima Gadlum is even Naniach, it's correct that it draws the tam out, but when the tam comes out, now there's a fire right there. There's a fire right there that did the Libun Kal. So if a fire could destroy a dover mood of liquid milk, physical milk that's actually coming out, imagine what it could do to the blia, the mamash, you know, something just in the air, something little like that, then of course it would be served that thing, and that's one of the reasons why people don't follow this Prima Gadlum. Okay? They say it might be true that it draws out the time rather than burning it, that could be, but that doesn't cause a problem. Even the Prima Gadlum itself is not true. It's a beautiful bit. We don't consider it to be a problem.
So well, after a fire, and you have to say it's the heat.
Correct. Correct. The strong heat there that's making the Libun Kal is going to do the same thing. Okay. And now, but what we're really going to talk about, our main topic for today.
That's relevant for catching ovens,
for kashering ovens, yes, but when you learn Hagol's Kalim, we found there are other reasons why a home oven might need to be in a minyan anyhow. Other reasons for the side. But yes, for this reason, you wouldn't have to do it. That's correct. You could do it even if it was minyan. Yes. Okay. Unless for the traditional reason why things have to be in a minyan, where you could do it. Yes. Okay. So our main thing we'll talk about is freeze dryers. We'll see as we talk about them that freeze dryers have to do with the shayla also. Okay. In the small amount. We're going to talk more freeze dryer than the shayla, but okay, but like that. Okay, like this. Okay, well, how does freeze dryer work? Okay, so what we're looking at here is as if you're looking straight into the freeze dryer. Okay, and this is an empty chamber. Okay, let me back up before I tell you how the freeze dryer works. Okay, when you want to dry something out, you want to remove all the moisture out of it, you heat it up. So, like, you could put a piece of meat into an oven that's 150 degrees, and it'll turn into beef jerky. Okay, you dry it out for a couple of hours, and it'll dry out to turn into beef jerky. And you take vegetable herbs, and you put them into an oven that's 120 degrees for a few hours, and also it dries it out. You make dried like herbs that you have in your house, the spices that you have in your house, that's how they dry them out. You know? Okay. Or, we talked about once evaporating. You could even do at a vacuum, and you could evaporate juices at, you know, even less lower temperatures. Okay, we talked about that, how evaporators work. Okay, but all of those, the long and short of all of those is that you're taking a liquid, and you're turning it into a gas. Okay, so you're taking the juice was the easiest case, it's actually a liquid, and you're turning it into a gas. Or you're taking the water, if it's a juice, it's the easiest part. You're taking the water and boiling it out. Even when you're taking a piece of meat, you put the liquid, the water is in it's a solid right now, it's in the meat, turns into a liquid, and then it boils out, and you get it out. Okay? long and short is you're using heat to get it from being a liquid to being a gas, a vapor. Okay? But that heating affects the quality of the food. Okay? It takes away from the other properties that the food has to it also. So it came along people, and it's somehow connected to World War II, I'm not sure, whatever, and they found that,
connected to what?
World War II. At the end of World War II.
No, take orange juice and you evaporate it. You put the water back in, it won't be the same quality.
Right, it's not the same quality. You've taken some of the other things out with it also. You've ruined it also. By that heating, you ruined it also. Okay? So they figured out a way to go from solid to gas without ever being a liquid. Okay? The process, it's called sublimation. Okay? I don't know what that means. But it means is you go from being a solid to being a gas. Imagine you have a piece of ice. Okay, and the piece of ice goes from being a piece of ice, that's a solid, to being a gas without ever being a liquid in between, which sounds impossible, right? Ice has to first be liquid, and then it keeps on getting hotter, and it turns into a vapor. And this goes from being solid.
Liquid trapped in a fluid at room temperature is not a solid.
So it's a liquid. Right, it's a liquid.
It's just
so that goes from, more right, correct. It goes from being a liquid into being a gas. Okay. But here what happens is going from a solid to being a gas.
Now he's asking, what's in a gas?
Are you in here?
An example. No. I'm saying it's not
a solid.
There's no such thing.
Okay, so if it's a liquid and you piece of meat that the water in there is in a liquid form, and now we have to do something to get it out from a liquid form to being a gas, we have to do so much to it that it affects the food. We're gonna turn it into a solid. We're gonna change it from being a liquid into being a solid. We're gonna freeze it. That's why it's called a freeze dryer. First, we're gonna freeze it, turn it into a solid, and then we're gonna go from being frozen to being a gas without ever going back to being a liquid in between.
It's going to be a solid or a gas.
Correct, and it's never going to pass through the liquid stage in the middle. Okay, it's called sublimation.
Make it a solid.
We call it a freeze dry because first you freeze it. You freeze it very thoroughly so it's complete solid, and then you take it from being solid to being gas without ever passing in the middle. Okay, it goes through called the triple point. Yes, called the triple point through a process called sublimation. Those are all very big words. I can't explain to you the science of it. They've tried to explain to me. I don't get it. Whatever. Well, that's irrelevant. So anyhow, so that's what it does. It goes from being frozen to being gas, and it never
dry ice. This goes from solid to gas at room temperature.
Yeah, but this is not dry ice. This is whatever. Okay, so how does it work? Okay, so what is like this? Okay, now back to the picture. Okay, so we have here. You're looking at the freeze dryer like head on, looking at into this freeze dryer, and it's empty. There's nothing in there. So what do we have? They have this big chamber.
It's a circle, a window.
It's a tube. I'm explaining to you, it's a tube. You're looking into the tube. It's like, think about it, it's a truck, okay? You're looking into the tanker this way. Okay, it's horizontal. It's horizontal. We're looking into a horizontal tube, okay?
This looks like shelves in a hot box.
it's very close to that. Okay, so you're looking into the horizontal tube. And what you have here is, it's an empty tube. Okay, and that's the black wall around. Okay, and it has in it heating bars. Okay, a bunch of heating bars spaced in between there. I made you however many I made. Okay, and what you do is now separate from it. That's what the chamber will cut. Now you set up. You have a rack on wheels. Okay, you have this rack here. This is a plain good old fashioned. Nothing special about this rack. Just a plain old rack. And onto it you put trays of frozen food. Okay, the food. It's not just frozen, it's like seriously frozen. They put it to deep freeze, usually like 20 hours. Like it really has to be thoroughly, completely frozen.
Before they even move it.
Yeah, this is in a freezer.
In a standard freezer.
In a good old-fashioned freezer. It has to be very cold and solidly frozen, like without like no bits that are not even frozen, solidly frozen. And then you roll the rack into the chamber. Okay? You roll the rack into the chamber. And the way it's set up, the way you see how it's set up is that for every part of the rack has a tray on top of it and has a heating bar right underneath it. There's a heating bar underneath the tray, underneath the rack itself. Okay, the rack, under each bar of that rack, there's a heating bar sitting underneath it to heat it up. Because what's going to happen is in this chamber, this product's going to sit in the chamber for like 20 hours, for a really long time. And under almost perfect vacuum, and the temperature is very controlled. That's why there are heating bars between every one of them, because it's in your, let's say in your home oven, you heat your home oven to 350. It means one part is 350, one part is 340, one part is 320. It's not exactly the same temperature because the heat's only one place. Here, the heat comes from every single spot, so the temperature is very, very well controlled, all computer controlled, and it makes it that it runs through this very long, very, very long cycle, like 15, 20 hours. And at a very specific temperature, it goes a little higher, it goes a little lower, all kinds of very specific temperatures. And what happens is the product that's sitting on the tray slowly loses its water. But it does not change the way it looks. Okay, if you put the food onto there, you put the food onto there, and when it comes out afterwards, it looks almost exactly the same as when it went in. Okay,
where does the water vapor go out?
So there's a vacuum here, and a vacuum, and also there's sucking, which is the same thing. We vacuum that. So the vapor gives the appearance of disappearing. In other words, you don't see things coming out of it. It's turning into a vapor, but it's coming out very slowly into a vapor. And as that's happening, it's completely being yanked out of the machine because we want it can't be any liquid in the machine. Liquid is the enemy over here. We want to not have liquid on these products. We want to go from...
What temperature is this?
So it depends. In the 140, 150, 160 range, okay?
Oh, not even more extreme temperatures there.
No, just the opposite. The vacuum is what's letting things boil, but we're not trying to boil. We're trying to get to what they call the triple point. The triple point, whatever, I don't know what the science is. It's where the solid, liquid, and gas are all at the same stage. I don't know what that means. I'm saying words I don't know what I'm talking about. And at that point, it can go from being a solid, it can pass from being solid to gas without having to be in the liquid stage.
What kind of food is this?
So, what kind of food? What kind of food? Good question. Okay. So, they've tried to do with things like lettuce, okay? But lettuce has so much moisture in it that when you're finished, there's nothing left, okay? But they do a lot of it. So, the thing that too much moisture doesn't work. But, like, for example, if you buy an instant soup and it has vegetables in it, those are freeze dried. Okay, that's a freeze-dried, so you can see the peas that are over here. Okay, the peas over here, it looks like a regular pea. Okay, it looks like a regular pea. There's nothing, exactly looking like a regular pea, but give or take, it looks like a regular pea. But it's been freeze-dried. All the moisture
is cooked.
It was not cooked. Oh, I don't know if it was cooked. I shouldn't say. I have no idea if it was cooked or not. But it was, I don't know if a pea needs to be cooked. But it's a pea.
Yeah, it's cornmeal.
Okay, it was frozen. The moisture was taken out of it by freeze-drying. And now, if we put it back into water, it'll reabsorb it and turn, so to speak, back into a regular pea the way it was originally.
It's the same size it was before.
It's the same everything as it was before.
How is that possible, the moisture, is that?
Because when we freeze dry, it holds its structure without having any liquid in it. Okay, that's why lettuce, it didn't work. Because and if you feel it, you'll see it, it's very fragile. You can see it's fragile, and you could crack it, but when you freeze dry it, it held onto it. Okay, so they do it for vegetables like you see it in your soup. You hopefully don't see in your soup that they do it also for shrimp. Okay, shrimp is a big one. Meat, fruits and vegetables like strawberries, like if you make breakfast cereal that has strawberries in it, okay, those are freeze-dried strawberries. Okay, you can't put regular strawberries into your cereal.
The value of freeze-drying it
is? It holds the quality of the product.
Quality, and it's shelf-stable.
Right, it doesn't need to be frozen, yes. It doesn't need to be frozen, and it'll never rot because there's no moisture in it, and it's supposed to taste good. It's supposed to be like the original thing, okay?
Is it coffee freeze dried?
And coffee, yeah, we're going to get to coffee. I have coffee here. We're going to get to the coffee in a second, okay? And coffee is a big thing that people freeze dry. And herbs, okay? Herbs also are things that are freeze dried. So the herbs and the...
But you can't eat freeze dried stuff. It seems to be reconstituted.
You can eat it. It just doesn't have the consistency that you'd want to have of a pea. It has everything of the pea is in there. It just doesn't... It's everything. All you can add to it is water to make it back, so to speak, into a pea. Okay. I'm going to use peas, herbs, and coffee.
Hold on. We talked about an evaporator. You make a pressure.
And you vacuum.
And then you boil it out.
Right.
What's the difference?
Because over here, you're not boiling it. When you boil it out, it first has to be a liquid and then to be a gas. Here, the structure makes it that it goes. It is a vacuum.
How does it work? What's the difference? Is there
any
evaporating in 116
or else? It's a sublimation thing.
It's science, but what they practice, what's different?
What the difference is that it's not...
You're just boiling at lower temperatures, that's all.
Right.
You're
getting to a very specific place where it doesn't have to turn into a liquid first.
The same temperature
it's solid.
Vacuum. I'm not sure what's...
But it's ice. The thing you're putting in is ice, not liquid.
Oh, you put it in frozen.
You put it in a frozen thing, and somehow it goes from being frozen to being vapor. And magically skips that liquid state. You can't... frozen juice, you can't put it into an evaporator. I mean, you could. If you go into an evaporator, it would turn into liquid juice, and then it would boil out. But that's not what's happening here. Okay, now, so the coffee and the herbs, I'm just going to use it as an example of just showing a detail, and that was like this. Okay, the difference between, I randomly priced things, okay, this is just a sample, okay, the difference between freeze-dried and spray-dried coffee. Freeze-dried coffee tastes...
Can you just back up a step?
Yes.
You're talking about coffee beans, coffee liquid.
Right. Okay, good. Okay, so I should explain that.
Instant coffee?
It is instant coffee, yes. Coffee beans or ground coffee are not cooked in. When you make instant coffee means is you take coffee beans, you roast them, and you make a pot of coffee, a really, really big pot of
not
coffee. You make a...
Instant coffee is not just roasted beans.
I said, first you roast the beans, okay. And then you make a big pot of coffee. That's what the company's doing. And then you percolate them. You make them. You cook them into a big pot of coffee, and then you take the water out of it.
Is that concentrated strength?
It doesn't make a difference whether it's concentrated. The point is...
Why don't you add water to take out
water? Not my problem. And then the point is, you make a big pot of coffee. You can make it concentrated if you like to. A big pot of coffee, and then you boil the water out of it. So now you have...
I thought it was spray-dried.
Well, how do you boil the water out of it? So you can either freeze dry it or you could spray dry it. That's the way you get the water out. That's the way you boil the water out. So there's two ways to do it. You can either freeze dry it or you could spray dry it. The freeze dried coffee reconstitutes better and it tastes more like the original coffee as opposed to the spray dried, which is does not reconstitute as well. I'm going to show you later what the difference is. They're not considered the same quality. Okay. So in my when I looked at two things, the price was $1.40 for the freeze dried. $1.40 an ounce and 85 cents an ounce for the spray dry. Okay, that was the difference.
Real price.
What?
Real price.
Those are real prices. Okay, I don't know if that's. Oh wait, that's just where I happened to look. That was the price. Okay, now, as compared to, in an herb, and I took parsley, the price per ounce of spray dry, which is the regular parsley you have in your house or whatever, it was about $3 an ounce, and freeze dried was $31 an ounce. Okay, so the
parsley is spray dried.
So you say, what is spray-dried parsley? So let me give you one more second. I'm going to show you one more part of my slide. And so the difference in price was you're paying 68% more for this freeze-dried coffee, but you're paying almost 1,000 times more for the freeze-dried.
1,000.
Well, 1,000%, right, correct. 10 times more for the freeze-dried parsley. So he says, which Meshuggah is going to pay for that? And the answer is, that's why in your house you don't have freeze-dried parsley. So, if you make a fancy sauce and you want to have parsley that has special qualities to it, and you're putting in just a little bit, you're going to buy freeze-dried parsley. That's the kind of people who buy freeze-dried herbs, are people making a very high-quality product, or they want it to have the very specific consistency. So those people buy freeze-dried herbs. there's quite a market for it, but not for me and you. I mean, if you walk into the supermarket and you saw parsley costs $2 for the bottle or $20 for the bottle, which one are you going to pick? You picked one that's $2. Same thing.
We're still waiting to hear about spray-dried parsley.
Oven dried.
Yes, I'm sorry. Oven dried. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes, sorry. Okay, we'll fix my slide a different day. Okay. So now that we've talked about those things, now now let's get to the hashgacha. A freeze dryer is a very advanced, complicated piece of equipment. If you have one, most companies are not going to have one. A coffee company will have one because they make coffee every day of the week. That's all they do is make coffee, and they have enough business that they keep their freeze dryer just for coffee.
So how do they load the coffee? They freeze it?
Yeah. They take the liquid, freeze it into thin trays in it, and then put it into there. So we assume that freeze-dried coffee is made on equipment that's all it's done. That's what we do with it. They make coffee with it. Okay, that's why we assume you could buy freeze-dried coffee without hashgacha, the plain coffee. Okay? Unflavored, yes. But everybody else who has a freeze-dryer, most people don't have enough business to freeze-dry stuff, to be freeze-drying all the time, to keep the freeze-dryers busy. Okay? Think about people who make, I don't know, fruits and vegetables. How much stuff do they have that they're going to be making? So it's very common that the person either owns the machine and lets other people send stuff in, or they have a toll person, a guy who does it just for everybody else. You have some stuff to do, you send it to him, and he freeze dries a few and sends it back to you. Like we give hashgacha to a company that their real business is, one part of the business is freeze drying fruit, and the other part of the business is freeze drying ice cream and yogurt. Okay? They've got to keep themselves busy. They have to keep things going in machinery.
Machinery, ice cream?
Yeah. So you say, why would any sugar wine by freeze your ice cream? You sort of missed the point because it's not cold. It's a good question. I don't know. Okay, but
it gets stable, whatever. I don't know.
But what are you doing there? It's not cold. It's not ice cream.
I gotta reconstitute it.
No, you could reconstitute, but people eat the ice cream and the yogurt, they eat straight. They eat in the freeze-dried form. The yogurt, actually.
Have you seen this retail?
Yeah, the yogurt is a big product for babies. It's a baby food. It's a baby, it's called baby treat. If they're like little drops of yogurt, those are freeze-dried. They're freeze-dried. Okay? Probably by our company. They're one of the big people who does it. Okay, anyhow, the one we certify. Anyhow, but then people make shrimp and these vegetables that go in here, and the same company will make 100 different things, okay? So,
you said meat, right?
Meat, yes, meat and shrimp. For some reason, shrimp is big in the non-Jewish world, these soups have shrimp in them. The good thing, hashkaha-wise, is that assuming we have, let's say, we'll talk in a second, we have separated freeze-dryers, or whatever we have to have that separate, the good news is, the process is really slow. Okay, the product sits on a tray for 10-20 hours. It sits in the freeze dryer for 20 hours. So the mashgiach who walks in, you can't hide anything in a freeze drying company. Okay, because when you walk in, if let's say the red trays are the milchig ones and the black trays are the parv ones, okay, you look in the freeze dryer, you're going to see what it is. There's no playing games over here because it's sitting there for a zillion hours. So the mashgiach who walks in will see what's going on. So if they're following the rules, it's in a way that makes it easier to see. Batches don't take 5 minutes to make, they take 20 hours to make. So it's easier to be on top of things when you're watching it. When you actually walk in, no one could play games and move things around.
They allow companies to be kosher trays as long as they have separate trays, and when Mashkia pops in.
We're going to get to that. So we're talking about the chambers. We're talking about the chamber in 1 second. But tray-wise, so depending on the setup, there's a potential for knowing which one is which because you can catch them. It's easier to catch them. Right? Now, the trays is assumed, the trays that the food sits on, those would have to be separate or koshered, one way or the other, whichever you want to do. You want to separate or kosher, however you want to do that. Obviously, that means hashkacha, we're going to kosher them. Okay, both of them. What about the chamber and the racks? Okay, what about the chamber and the racks? So if you don't know, if you just look at it, you say, well, we're boiling water in these things, and there's problems of zeah, bleas of zeah going from the food all over the place, we're boiling it out. And that's going to come back to our din. Our din, which is, no, the din is, what the din we're talking about is that the eish is served with a dover mu'ud. So every single one of the trays of frozen food has on top of it a heating tray, a heating bar right on top of it. Okay, so as the vapor, any vapor that would come off is coming up to the heating bar that's right on top of it. So when our Machaber says, he didn't know about freeze dryers, but when he said that the ace could be served, the Dover Mu'ud, that's going to be served the top one. Now, except that the very top one, the top tray doesn't have a bar on top of it. The top tray doesn't have a bar on top of it. But there, we have, first of all, we have a vacuum. Okay, the vacuum which is sucking all the moisture out of it. Remember, it's the enemy to have moisture in this thing. So they're sucking all the moisture out of it. And we'll see when we learn about Zeah, that in order for Zeah to make something, even if it is chafed, to make it chafed up the next food, you'd have to have condensation. And of course, there's no condensation here. Again, there's the enemy here to have vapors in here.
So it's accepted you need the same one for...
So you can't have the trays that the food sits on have to be...
And the heating bar is the same below here, say.
Is what?
The heating bars themselves.
The heating bar doesn't touch the food.
Has trays on them, it's able to
get it. It doesn't touch a tray. It doesn't touch a tray. No, the bars are between the racks.
The tray is sitting on, the shelf that the tray is sitting on.
Oh, yeah, so what's the going to say? Yes, correct. Yeah. Now, I'll mention to you, a child came up just a few days ago. I don't know the answer yet, but it's a gate to this. Happened to come up.
It doesn't happen that things fall off the tray, go on the shelf, or whatever.
So it's a good question.
In the real life things happen.
Where would it fall?
So you think maybe it falls onto the rack. That's what you worry about. It'll fall onto the rack. Okay, I'm not sure. I'll have to think about that part. Now, I'll mention to you where Shaila came up. Shaila came up this week. Shaila came up about a week ago. Just interesting. It seems that there's a new thing that people have started. There's one company in the United States who's doing it that I know. People who have mother's milk, and they right now what normal people do, they want to save it for a different day, they freeze it. Okay, so this company says you can send us frozen milk, and we will freeze dry it for you and send it back to you as a powder, and now it's shelf stable. Now you could travel with it, you could do things, you don't have to keep it in the freezer. Okay? So this is a, you want to have, this person wants to have the mother's milk for their baby, they don't want to have to keep it frozen, so they ship it, you have to ship it frozen to them, they freeze dry and send it back to you with instructions. You know, you sent us 4.2 ounces, so we give you back this much powder,
Swiss,
this much water.
Milk.
And they, of course, they guarantee. So there's questions, is it your milk? That's one part of the shayla. Is it really your milk? There's a shayla, there's also shaylas because even if it's your milk, there are dinim, we talked about the only dinim, you're only allowed to give milk to a baby, mother's milk to a baby, while he's still nursing, not when he stops nursing, so you can't hold it or give it to your neighbor. Okay, I'll put that on site. But the shayla is on the freeze drying itself. Okay? So we're looking into it. We don't know yet. But it might
that they can't tell us? This one company can't tell us?
No, a consumer can't tell us.
Oh.
Consumer can't tell. So the question is like this. My assumption, this is we don't know yet. Assumption is when people, let's say 50 people send in their milk. They're not dumping everybody's stuff onto a tray and then giving it back to the gift to it, we hope. We assume that they're keeping everybody separate. Okay, so what does that mean? How are they keeping everybody separate? How are they doing that? So somehow, Kinneret, my guess is, they're keeping it in your original package, and they're opening the package. Okay, they're opening the package, but keeping it inside, so that when we're finished, all your stuff stayed in your package, and the next person stayed in their package.
Send you a specific package to send it to them?
I don't know. I think they send you a special package. If not, whatever we can get, I think they send you a special package. So they're keeping each... instead of it looking like this, it'll be like shelving that could hold 50 packages on it, and put everybody's into it. We freeze-dry the liquid out of it, and then keep your powder in your own special pouch, so that yours is yours, and the next person's is somebody else's. Which is to say is that there's no shared trays. There's a tray, but there's a barrier between... The only thing that could become not kosher is the thing that's touching the food, and that's yours. If they do shrimp in there the next day, it's hard to imagine, but if they do shrimp in there the next day, then make difference to you. It's not touching your tray. So that's what I was thinking. We're still poking around this issue.
Dedicated freeze dryer is
right. So if it's dedicated for mother's milk, if it's really, it probably is just structurally. No, it probably is because of structurally. Think about what it has to be built like to hold these little packages. Probably built differently, or maybe have different racks than you do for shrimp. I'm not sure.
We wouldn't say go to your non-Jewish mother's tray. That's not tray.
So it's a very interesting question. The Rambam brings it's Parashas Davim Shechina. You shouldn't do it, this and that. And Rabbi Rock has been telling me that no, the people take it more seriously than that. So we're working at that angle of that to know if it's really trafe. Is it more trafe if you get somebody else's milk? Is that more trafe? And then my suspicion is, but that they're really good at tracking. Everybody gets their own milk back. Okay, all this has to be, I'm just mentioning because it came up this recently and we're talking about freeze dryers. Okay, now, some other things are, just quickly, three other things. One is, freeze dried food is meant to be ready to eat. It means when you put the water back into it, you're ready to go once that happens. So, if you're freeze drying something that needs bishul yisrael, so then, aside from the freeze drying needs hashgacha to make sure they didn't do meat on that equipment, you also want to make sure that the cooking wasn't bishul yisrael. Like you make potatoes, okay? There's such a thing as freeze dried potatoes. They like would go also into instant soup kind of thing, like chunks. They're not necessarily freeze dried, but if they would be freeze dried, that would be. So then, the freeze drying is one part of the question, but they may have done something beforehand to prepare this thing to make it fit to eat once we finish freeze drying it. That's one thing.
So you're not talking about the baking that takes place.
No, not in the freezer. I'm saying before it got to the freeze dryer, they had to do something to it.
Okay.
So that once it will be freeze dried, you'll be able to eat it.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
This is not considered to be baking?
Cool. It's not meant to cook it.
It's there a long time, it's for sure, right?
But the goal here is bafka to not cook it.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow.
Not cooking and baking, whatever.
Okay, and then next is.
So you put raw potatoes there, it won't work?
It'll work, but when the problem is...
It won't be edible?
No, it will not be edible. No, it will not be edible.
For 20 hours. Why is that not edible?
I don't know.
Yeah, that's...
Okay, next is... most things that get freeze-dried, like whole things, like fruits and vegetables, okay, things that are solid, like a strawberry, you don't get anything to it, usually. You don't usually get something to it. Sometimes they do. Sometimes they'll infuse... the blueberry with sugar before they freeze dry. But usually you do it straight, and therefore it would be, if it was kosher, it's probably kosher Pesach. So one of the big example of that is freeze-dried coffee that we let people use for Pesach, in contrast to spray-dried coffee that we don't let people use for Pesach. Okay? So if you haven't seen my video, this is freeze-dried coffee. You can come look at it. This is freeze-dried coffee. Okay, and this one is, and this is spray-dried coffee. Okay? And when you look at it, you see it's really easy to tell once you put it into your hand that the freeze-dried coffee is chunks. Think about it. It was frozen as a sheet and then broke up, and the chunks, if you put it in your finger, you'll feel it better. It's a chunk. As opposed to the spray-dried coffee, is really a powder. Now, they agglomerate it back into it to look like chunks, but it's really, lamaise, it's a powder. If you rub the spray-dried in your fingers, it breaks apart into a powder very easily.
It comes out as spray-dried as powder?
Yes, it comes out as spray-dried as powder.
And then what do they do?
Then they what's called agglomerate, which is to say they put a little moisture to it and they dry it again, so that makes the pieces stick together. That helps it in the hydrate better, and it looks more like it's freeze-dried, but it's really not freeze-dried. It's really, it looks like more like freeze-dried, but it's obviously not. And the freeze-dried one, if you hold it in your hand, you can crumble it if you want to, but it's a chunk, it's harder to crumble, okay? And the last is,
and what's the color?
So the difference is, if I have coffee, if it's freeze-dried, mm-hmm. they don't add anything to the coffee. So freeze-dried coffee for Pesach is okay, if it's not, be careful. Yeah, right. But spray-dried, they sometimes add starches to it to help in the drying. It just helps, it gives more solids for the coffee to hold on to. No, in the spray-drying itself.
Before they put in the spray-dryer.
They'll add starch to it. So there's a potential, it doesn't happen so often, but it could happen. So therefore we say spray-dried needs to have a shock of a Pesach. The freeze-dried doesn't. Nothing, well, the spray-dryer, yes, because of the equipment, yes, you're right. The spray-dryer equipment needs... It needs hashgachah beis also.
Okay, the freeze dryer.
No. I take that back. No, the freeze dryer and the spray dried coffee don't. We don't worry about the kale because they're dedicated. Because that's what they do all day long.
It sure is. And in order to spray their pump,
sometimes they put an air to make it to hold on to it better. As opposed to the freeze drying, it's just straight. They just put the coffee in as.
Oh, we say even instant coffee is okay with
freeze. Only if it's freeze drying. So we tell people buy this brand and that, but we don't tell them freeze dried and spray dried. It's hard for people to usually figure out. So we say these 10 brands are okay.
So maybe I'm mixing up. We say it doesn't need hashgacha, right?
For year round.
Instant coffee. But
for Pesach. Regular
coffee doesn't need hashgacha.
Correct. Okay. But for Pesach, it does. Okay. Now, the last thing is.
Grand Evans?
Which one?
That's crazy.
No, I got it from. That one I actually got from Shul. But I actually have it here. I could show it to you if you want. Yeah. And the freeze dried is from upstairs.
I know Folger's Pesach stories is surely freeze dried.
I have no idea. I don't know. I'm not a coffee drinker, so I don't know. Okay, the last thing is that the din is that if a bug is 12 months old, a vegetable, the bug in it is 12 months old, the bugs are dried out in their mother. Almost everyone assumes that if it's mechanically dried out, it's the same thing. So if you take parsley and take cilantro and we put it into an oven and we heat it up and it becomes the equivalent of 12 months, that's also good enough. It's also considered the bugs to be dried out. And freeze drying, again, it's very different. It's a very different way of doing it. But it's also, when we learned to learn, I told you about how we freeze dried. Rabbi Gissinger did it first, and then Rebelsky and Schechter weren't such believers. We did it again. We freeze dried bugs, brought it to them, and they said, yeah, those are also equally dried out.
Freeze dried bugs or herbs with bugs on them?
No, we freeze dried bugs.
We picked up the trees.
I don't remember. Maybe put it on a piece of paper. It came from a vegetable company, an herb company, that they themselves have a machine, a tumbler, to get up bugs from it. Not the kind of bugs we want to get out, but their kind of bugs. And they have, I don't remember those words, a kubush or shotsim. Okay, underneath is a box full of a zillion bugs in it underneath this tumbler. So we scoop some out and put them into the freeze dryer. Had to be frozen first and then freeze dried. And when he looked at them, then he said, yeah, that's fun. Those are fun also.
No,
you just touch them to see were they actually dried out enough. Yeah, they were fine. So it's assumed also that freeze-dried herbs are not considered, bugs are not considered to be a total issue also. Yeah.